Narang Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudirayat Nastapraeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. This morning we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 19, entitled The Lord Begs Charity from Bali Maharaj. Text number 37. Pardon me, text number 38, and perhaps 39. Atrapi bhavrachayar gitam shrinu me sura sattama satyam om iti yat proktam yan Neti ahanritam hi tat atrapi bhavrachayar gitam atrapi bhavrachayar gitam shrunu me surasattama shrunu me surasattama Satyam Om Iti Yatproktam Satyam Om Iti Yatproktam Yannetyahanritam Hitat Yannetyahanritam Hitat Atrapi Bhavrachayar Gitam Srinume Surasattama Satyam Om Iti Yat Proktam Yannetyahanritam Hitat Atrapi Bhavrachayar Gitam Srinume Surasattama Satyam Om Iti Yat Proktam Yannetyahanritam hitat Atra api. In this regard, or in deciding what is truth and what is not truth, Bahurachai, by the Shruti mantras known as Bhavritta Shruti, which are evidence from the Vedas. Gitam, what has been spoken. Srinu, just hear. Me, from me. Asura Sattama, O best of the Asuras. Satyam, the truth is, Om Iti, preceded by the word Om, yet that which, Proktam, has been spoken, yet that which is, Na, not produced by Om. Iti, thus, aha, it is said, anritam, untruth, he, indeed, tat, that. Translation. One might argue that since you have already promised, How can you refuse? O best of the demons, just take from me the evidence of Bhavricha Shruti, which says that a promise is truthful, preceded by the word Om, and untruthful if not. So, Lord Vamandeva is discussing with Bali Maharaj, and Bali Maharaj has made a promise that he would give whatever Vamanadeva asked, because Vamana has appeared to him as a dwarf Brahmana, and now in preparing him, Vamana is reminding him that you have already promised. Does anyone have any questions on this verse? Okay. Practically speaking, there are four pillars of religion, just as there are four pillars in this room. Cleanliness, austerity, mercifulness, and truthfulness. So with the progression of the yugas from Satyuga to Dwapar, to Treta, to Kali, the principles of religion become diminished. In fact, that's one of the symptoms by which you can understand that you are now no longer in the previous age, you are now in the succeeding age. So the last leg of religion, the last pillar of religion, is truthfulness, and that is existing to some degree in this Kali Yuga. It is very, very important that a Brahmana and a Vaishnava should be truthful. It is important because you cannot be happy if your mind is polluted with deceitfulness. A person who is always scheming, always planning how to cheat others, he will be a liar. But a devotee whose heart is free from any attachment to or any interest in exploiting anyone in this material world, he has nothing to lose by being truthful. His heart is not heavy. His heart is light. And also it is important to be truthful because one cannot approach the absolute truth unless he is truthful. The ultimate definition of truthfulness is to accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is a Vedic injunction. And a Vedic injunction means that the devotee tries to guide his life by seeing through the eyes of scripture, Shastra Chakshus. When you give up this plan making, when you realize that no matter how hard and how expertly you concoct different theories about life, it's not possible for you to understand the modes of material nature. It's not possible for you to understand everything in this material world. We are very limited in our capacity to know, and the material world is so complex. The law of karma, the law of action and reaction, is so complex that just when you think you've solved all your problems, an earthquake happens and everything is spoiled, or someone in your family dies, or your body fails, and you have to completely change all the plans which you had made. So, unless someone has an understanding that there is a purpose in life, that there is a supreme being, he just won't be able to let go of his attachment to his plan making. He won't be able to let go of his material efforts. So truthfulness is very, very important. And especially in spiritual life, we have to be truthful with ourselves. Self-realization means self-introspection also. Constantly we have to look at our progress, getting guidance from our mentors, our guides, and we have to try to cut out the defects or the sickness or the attachments that we have. We have to reform our character so that we become worthy of entering the eternal spiritual realm. So this requires constant attention. It requires comparing the ideal character with our own situation. And in our assessment, we have to be truthful. There's no use in bluffing ourselves. Humility, we should take the humble approach and assume that I have been in this material world for so many lifetimes. Undoubtedly, I'm contaminated with lust, anger, and greed. And there's a need for a lot of cleansing. And if I get an opportunity to root out some of my anarthas, it is my great good fortune, because I will come closer to Krishna. I will come closer to my constitutional position. I will come closer to a state of happiness which I am longing for. A state of happiness which does not depend on anyone else in this material world who may be diseased. The problem is, in the material world, we're constantly affected, adibhautik, klesha, by other living beings. No matter what plans we make, people always interfere with our plans and disturb us and hurt us, because they are making their own plans, which doesn't include us. Everyone is very selfish. Everyone sees the self as the body. And happiness means gratifying my body, not gratifying your body. So there's a natural war There is naturally violence in the material world. You just can't avoid it. And that's the fact of life. Jivo jivasya jivanam. Ahastani sahastanam apadani chatushpatam. Falguni tatra mahatam. Jivo jivasya jivanam. One living being gets ahead in life by destroying another, putting down another, eclipsing another. There's no question of sharing. There's no question of abundancy mentality. People have a scarcity mentality that I must promote my own interest. There is no guarantee that there is enough for everyone, and therefore we find people most untruthful, most corrupt. And there's nothing you can do about that. That is the nature of this material world. You can go around and beg people to be honest. You can go around and beg people to be kind and gentle. You can even set a good example. Won't work. Matirna Krishne Paratasvato va mito bipadyeta griha vratanam. People are caught up in their griha medi mentality, envious of others, and not by good instruction, not by setting an example, not by receiving reference from authority. By no means will people be influenced unless there is within them some desire to improve. And the result is Adanta Gobir Vishatat Tamishram Puna Punas Charvita Charvanam. People are conditioned to chewing the chewed, and they're insecure, they're not ready to go beyond that, to pioneer into renunciation and evolution to liberation. Renunciation leads to liberation, but people are not prepared to proceed, and therefore they're stuck. And if you take shelter of them, if you think you can be happy in their association, then you will also become caught up and completely compromised in your truth-seeking. And therefore, we have to see ourselves through the eyes of Scripture. Our introspection involves analysis by comparison with the descriptions of the pure devotees of the Lord. And indeed, we must verily try our utmost to follow in their footsteps. Dharmasya tatvam. If you want to know the truth about dharma, nihitam guhayam, is not so confidential that you cannot realize the highest truth, but you have to follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. Mahajano yena gata sapantaha. They have been so kind to us that they have come here. Their nature is compassionate. They have told us in so many words. They have printed books in this Kali Yuga. We're so dull, we need books. And they have demonstrated by their personal lives how we can be successful. So we must take it very seriously. Otherwise, we'll miss the opportunity and There's no guarantee when we'll get this opportunity again. So although it may be difficult to understand initially the whole scope of things, for example, in our Krishna consciousness movement, we are very young. We have been riding on a wave of rather sentimental devotion, not much scholarship, and certainly very little awareness of culture and even a debatable amount of realization. So there's so much more for us to appreciate, and we have to make every effort to provide the facilities which will help us to have a growth experience in Krishna consciousness, a mature and overall understanding of life and dharma and culture. And just like, for example, by Lord Krishna's blessings, by the mercy of my god brothers, I was able to be present for a very nice Janmashtami festival in New Vrajadham. So the devotees there had worked very hard to create a very nice experience for everyone who attended. There was a very beautiful swing festival accompanied by the most melodious singers and bhajans. There was a beautiful boat festival in which the Lord was put in a lake, actually in the middle of the lake, and worshipped by everyone offering lights and candles. These are things that are done in India. So this was simply a replica or a replica of what is going on in India in all holy places. And there was very nice Bharatanatyam dance performance by the devotees, and beautiful bhajan, Radha Krishna Pranamore, and the whole place was so nicely decorated, and the whole experience was just imbued with sweetness. It was like honey. And these opportunities and facilities give us a very complete experience. Of course, chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, even japa, is enough. But for most of us, we're so dry, we need a little juice. We need to be a little oil, a little olive oil. We need to loosen up a little bit. We need to be able to drink the nectar of the holy name. So the culture, Vedic culture, and all the aspects of it are the perfect setting. So there's a lot of room for us to grow and build. We've tried in the past, now we're a little bit in a downswing, you can say, but we can always regroup and rebuild. I'm going to go on to text number 39. Are there any questions about that verse, first of all? Yes. Well, are you talking about yourself or checking for others? Me neither. Okay. That is an institutional problem which we hope that our leaders are dealing with. How to make enough checks and balances so that the institution functions nicely, and that nobody is able to exploit the collective efforts of the devotees. Devotees come forward and they cooperate together in a preaching mission, which is the most effective way to preach. It is the desire of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta and his father also, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. It was the desire of Srila Prabhupada that we preach the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu collectively in the combined mission. We will be more successful. Prabhupada gave the famous example. I think it was Hans Christian Andersen, but someone has a bundle of, the father has a bundle of sticks, and he asks his son, take this bundle of sticks and break them over your knee. So the son tries and cannot break them. So then he says, you take out one stick. So he takes out one stick. Now you break that stick, and he breaks it very easily. So in America we say, united we stand, divided we fall. Individually, living separately, there's much greater chance that we will be bewildered over a period of time by the bad association of the materialistic men, by our own mind. We need the association of other Vaishnavas to help us. So the institution is important in many ways, but and we're all contributing, and we all get very disturbed when I've surrendered my time and energy and even resources in some cases for the development of the mission. And if there's no proper management, then sometimes devotees become crazy and they may exploit the mission or something. So we hope that they're dealing with that. I'm not talking about that. Because whether the mission succeeds or fails is not the final important thing to me. I know that I have a personal relationship with Krishna, and at the time of death, he's not going to look and see whether I, had a good GBC man or my president was. He's going to see whether I actually want his lotus feet, I want his service. I'm finished, I'm sick, I'm fed up with the material world. I have no longer any ambition to try to exploit others in this material. I just want out. I want his service. He's going to look to see if that is my desire. So somehow or other, I have to deal with my own spiritual life. That is the truth that I'm looking at. Now, as I said, we certainly should cooperate as members of the institution. We should add our, give our ideas and even work towards purification, improvement of the institution so that it will facilitate the preaching mission, and it will also be a better atmosphere for us to serve. But personally, I have two lives. I have my institutional life, and I have my private commitment to Krishna and to my Guru Maharaj. And the most sacred to me is my commitment to my Guru Maharaj. And it means everything to me. It is my word, Om, commitment to my Guru Maharaj. You know, so I can't, just because somebody else cheats or somebody else is deceptive, or I won't surrender to that. It has no value for me. Okay, I guess we stretched the limit of verse 38. So it's hardly valuable to go on to 39, although I'm dying to get into 39, because 39 deals with dying. But we will stop here and try to address 39 tomorrow. Are there any other questions on what we've discussed? Any comments? No questions or comments, huh? Yes. Yeah, I heard most of it, but what was the last, what was, what else affects? Affects what? Our Grihamedi mentality? Well, again, it's so obvious that sometimes we hate it. I, just as an example, if somebody comes and gives a Bhagavad Gita class and they stick to the basics, they preach just like Srila Prabhupada is preaching, some devotees will take an interest and listen out of obligation to attend Bhagavad Gita class, or just they like to hear. But if someone comes and speaks all esoteric verses and tells, you know, 2 hour long stories and, you know, it elaborates in so many unnecessary ways, somehow or other, people are very much attracted to it because, well, it's sometimes hard to deal with the simple basics. Although we can't go farther without becoming expert. People talk about rasa, bhakti, Raganuga Bhakti. But Srila Prabhupada emphasized sadhana bhakti completely. We will at some stage, even now, some devotees are writing about Krishna's intimate pastimes, and you should know that the books that they're writing are, even then they are somewhat, you're not getting the complete thing, because the complete thing is a little bit too high for us. So, you know, if I were to tell you the answer to that is to chant Hare Krishna, try to chant your rounds better, you know, you would say, yes, but give me some more, you know. Isn't there something deeper than that, something more complicated? Well, maybe we could talk about different things, but the real essence is, are we chanting our rounds nicely? Are we trying our best to practice the regulative principles of devotional service, such as the morning program? If you can't, just like when you take initiation, you promise Lord Chaitanya, you promise Srila Prabhupada, you promise Agni and all the deities who take part in the yajna, you promise the spiritual master that I will chant 16 rounds, that I will follow the four regulative principles, and that I will engage in devotional service, and that I will respect the institution, the leaders of the institution. You don't promise that I will dream of Rasleela, I will, you know, do this or do that. There may be many other things, maybe even beyond rasa bhakti, there may be many other things that we can do in our devotional service, but the basic things, they're the foundation. And you will find that those devotees, for example, I didn't see so much of. Srila Prabhupada was always very active. I mean, he chanted his rounds. He told us to chant rounds, and he chanted rounds. He didn't give up chanting because he was very elevated. He chanted at least 16 rounds. He was constantly absorbed. But I saw other venerable Vaishnavas, Prabhupada's godbrothers, who didn't do so much preaching. In the latter stages, they did little more. But I know one of them who was all day long chanting. So there is nectar in the holy name. The simple process, binatvam nama namino, associating with Krishna through his name. So the more you chant, just like Prabhupada's answer to the reporter, what do you expect to get out of all of this chanting? Prabhupada's response was more chanting. The holy name, all of the great Vaishnavas, all of the great poets, singers, they all praise the glories of the holy name. So that's certainly something that each and every one of us can do, is spend more time in chanting our japa and being truthful on the vows that we have taken. That's one level of truthfulness, and I don't think you can go to a higher level without, you know, at least your truthfulness should include that. If you're having trouble on that level, then you can, when you have something big, one way to deal with it is to break it down into small things and try to achieve incremental progress. So one can, you know, make some promises to himself and try to keep them. If one can't, I personally, maybe I shouldn't comment here, but I think that the Mangalarti here was made in a day when, you know, this was a dynamic book distribution center, or you know, the army was here. Lord Chaitanya's army. There was a very fired up group of book distributors, and so they wanted to get up early get all their rounds done and get out on Sankirtan early. I know that was the motive. But now those days are not here right now. We have maybe two fired up book distributors, or three or whatever, not so many. So the schedule might be changed so that Mangalarti was at 5 o'clock, the way it is in many temples, 4:30 or 5, so that congregational members could attend more easily. But basically we all that's our first promise, you know, to have some kind of good morning program. We may make different adjustments to help ourselves. Jai Sushi Gorintai. We may make a promise that, okay, for the next week, I'll try to get up at 5 o'clock. You know, maybe you can't do it all at once. I'm talking about devotees who have, you know, had a complete crisis. How can they improve? Well, the same principle is there for someone who is even relatively regulated in his devotional life. There's always room for improvement. So in that gap between where you are and where you want to go, you may try to achieve it at one jump, or you may try to achieve it gradually in a regulated way. But you should do things that you intend to do. You should make promises, because the most demeaning thing, although you may not know it, but the most demeaning, belittling, discouraging thing in your mind is when you try to do something and you fail. So that has a way of discouraging you. And it may be a tiny thing, and it may be a tiny discouragement. But if it happens again and again and again, then it builds up. And finally you just think, I can't do it. It's too hard for me. Of course you can do it. It's not like you're being asked to climb Mount Everest and maybe only one person can do it. This is a very simple level of action. Of course, we can all take up bhakti yoga. It's been designed for us. This is a designer yoga course, especially designed for Kali Yuga Vasis. So, but at every step, analyzing your situation, being honest about it, and trying to improve. Anyway, I think I answered your question. Any other questions? I've been listening to some tapes of Srila Prabhupada's lectures in Seattle in 1968, and even some other ones in 1966 in New York, but mostly in Seattle, those lectures were, Srila Prabhupada would lecture and then he would ask for questions. And, there's big long gaps in the tape where, you know, you think it's finished because Prabhupada's asked for questions and then there's no noise. But it's just Prabhupada patiently waiting if anyone wants to, in the Association of Devotees. One thing is asking the speaker, and the speaker gives an answer. That's one way to have a question and answer session. But another way is that someone asks a question and the speaker gives the first response. But then other Vaishnavas within the assembly, they give some further response or add some complication on the question or, and that kind of churning up, churning, you know, mixing up problems of Krishna consciousness or the science of Krishna consciousness, trying to squeeze out, trying to get a clearer understanding so that we can all go forward. In some ways, I've seen devotees give a class that would take maybe 10 or 15 minutes. Kirtanananda was like that. You never knew him, but he was one of the more powerful preachers in our movement. Of course, it became too much for him, but not enough humility in front of his own spiritual master, but still, he's a powerful guy. But he would often give very short classes. But the question and answer sessions would go on for a long time because he was very good at question and answers. And in New Vrindavan, a lot of times devotees were very, not exactly challenging with the intent to defeat him, but they were sometimes challenging. In other words, I can say something which may be a standard answer, or it may be an easy answer which doesn't take into account various other things which might affect the problem. Someone relates a problem and I give an easy answer. But those devotees would not let him get away with easy answers. So they would challenge, someone else would speak respectfully, but they would, you know, and in that way it generated a whole hour of questions and answers, and practically everyone in the class was so enlivened half the time that only the schedule forced them to quit. So, It's something that it's nice to. I was just in New Vrindavan and Bhakti Vidyapurna Maharaj was giving a class. So he had given his class and there were one or two questions and it was just kind of settling down. And he was talking something about Siksha and Diksha, and of course he has a lot of practical knowledge, other sampradayas and the history of our sampradaya. So I started to ask him questions, and you know, I had my own ideas, but I wanted to churn the nectar. I wanted to get more from him. I wanted to squeeze him. So I was asking questions. And practically, they have a sentence by sentence translation, so it slows things down a lot. But we got so much into it, we were having so much fun, that the translator got lost. About 60 to 70% of the devotees didn't pick it up, but those who did were very enlivened because we began to talk about so many things. He would say something and then I would question, well, what about this? And he would say, yes, that's right, actually, but this is, and you know, So I would say, you mean to say what you're actually saying is this, and yes, and went on like that. So it's something that you can learn how to, just sitting in a Bhagavatam class expecting a brilliant speech from someone, and that's it. That's one way of attending class, but I remember when I was in the West, especially when I say olden days, I refer to the West because India was a little different mood. It's getting better, much better now, but in my early days, not only the speaker would read the verse, but many devotees would read the verse in preparation for the class, because it was an opportunity for them to pre-digest the ideas in the class and even formulate questions. So you can all read tomorrow's verse and let's see what we come up with. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.